Welcome to Reframe, the podcast where we challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Helen Darby Dowman, and I'll be joined by expert researchers from Nottingham Trent University. Whether you're a curious mind or a critical thinker, listen as we unpack common beliefs and offer fresh perspective on the headlines that shape our world. In today's episode, we're questioning the belief that all zoos are unethical. Our guest is Dr. Sam Ward, Associate Professor of Zoo Animal Welfare at Nottingham Trent University, based in the School of Animal, Rural and Environmental Sciences. Dr. Ward shares insights into the reality of the zoo industry and what the science says about animal welfare in these spaces. Sam, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's lovely to be here.
So Sam, you've done a lot of research into zoo welfare. What would you say is the main assumption people make about zoos, and how does your research challenge that?
The main assumption is that zoos are not good places for animals. Essentially, I think people think back to the days when they were places of entertainment, places where there was lots of cages, lots of bars, lots of barriers. And so people always, will maybe relate back to a time when they went to a zoo when they were a child and it was not a very good place, not a happy place. And I think certainly these days things have changed dramatically from those old kind of fashioned menageries, is what we used to call them. My research looks into the welfare of animals in zoos. And I'm pleased to say that, a lot of the research that I do and other welfare scientists do within zoos is actually really important in changing the way that we manage animals. So if research shows that, there's a better way of doing things, zoos are really proactive in actually putting those changes in place. And that doesn't happen in a lot of other animal sector areas. It normally takes a lot of governmental push to be able to kind of change things. But actually the zoos, because they are maybe privately owned or charity owned and they want the best for their animals, they actually take on board the research and change things accordingly. So it's a really proactive system, which means that we're able to rely a lot on evidence-based management to be able to inform the way that we do things.
So many animal rights activists argue that keeping animals in captivity outweighs any potential benefits and that it violates the rights of the individual animals. What's your response to that?
So we do come up, working in zoos, we do come up against quite a lot of anti-zoo or activists, animal rights activists. And to be honest, I think it depends upon where your ethical mindset shifts. There's two different formats. There's utilitarian, which essentially is where you will build up a case, I suppose, to see, what the impacts are or the consequences on the welfare of the animals and how the benefits to the humans might be. And you would then weigh up that equally to be able to make sure that we're not taking advantage of the animals. And then there's animal rights, which essentially is where a belief system where you would kind of think that every animal has its own ability and own right to be able to have the same as everybody else or every other animal. So I suppose it's difficult to kind of answer that question in such a structured way, just because I have a very different viewpoint about animals compared to animal rights activists. But generally, in my way of viewing things, in zoos, there is a big discussion. There are ethical panels that will review all of the decisions that any zoo makes with all of the animals that they house. Even bringing animals in from other zoos, is that going to be beneficial? How is that going to impact the animals? Are the transportation of those animals going to be affected the welfare? So there's lots and lots of steps that are involved to be able to make sure that the decisions that are made are of the benefit to the animals and not going to impact on their welfare, as well as potentially a benefit to humans. So it's, like I say, it's a difficult one. We do come up against animal rights all the time. For me, I do believe that zoos are doing good things. They're doing massive work in the conservation and education space. And I don't know about you, but I've got into animals because of viewing animals in zoos. I love nature. I love animals because I went to zoos when I was a child. And I think that has the opportunity to inspire curiosity and inspire nature enthusiasts in the future. So for me, that's a massive gain from a zoo space, if it's a good zoo.
Yeah, I mean, I love a zoo, and my children certainly do. So I can see how it can inspire a lot. I mean, you just touched on it about what zoos do with conservation and education. So how do modern zoos balance their role with conservation, education and entertainment? And do you think the balance has shifted or is it shifting?
So it certainly has shifted from the past. So as I mentioned just before, the sort of menageries where it was very much one animal in a cage, move along to the next one animal in a cage. And I suppose realistically, back in the day when those zoos sort of in the United Kingdom, in Britain, London Zoo was one of the first in the 1800s. And it was very much about what are these animals? Let's, you know, it's still slightly educational because, you know, we wanted to learn and see what these animals were. But we now know a huge amount more. And as I mentioned, with the evidence-based management, we're able to kind of build on how to keep animals. So the biggest problem then was we don't know how to keep these alive. We don't know what they need. We don't know how to feed them. We don't know, you know, how to socialize them. And we now know huge amounts about a lot of animals, not all, and there's still gaps, but we still know an awful lot more. And essentially the way that we now manage animals in captivity is more about, you know, what their needs are as opposed to ours. So alongside that, the animals in zoos are seen as kind of ambassador animals. So the majority of the zoo animals that you'll see will never be released to the wild because they're too used to humans. They're very adapted to life, the way that they currently live it. So having people stand there, you know, maybe within a few meters, maybe 10 meters, depending upon the species. So they're used to the way that they live, and they're used to the way that the other visitors are. So you wouldn't really be able to put them out in the wild. They wouldn't survive. So they're kind of seen as this ability to be able to educate the public. And again, like I mentioned just before, the curiosity and the inspiration of what you might see when you smell a gorilla, or when you look at how tall and how actually massive a giraffe might be, or whatever, various different other elements. So for me, I think the shift has been massively towards the education. And I think zoos at the moment are really now steering a lot more towards conservation. So it has always been a really solid part of what they do, but it is even more so, and trying to get that message across to the public and to anybody who's willing to listen as just how much they're doing out in the wild, to not just providing money and funds, but actually the skills and the techniques and the, you know, research that wild locations need to be able to conserve animals better.
Sam, what are zoos actually doing in the conservation space then?
So it depends upon the zoo, but essentially we recognise, or within the zoo sector, we recognise something called in situ conservation, which essentially is work in situ where the animals are from. So that might be, you know, conducting research in these environments, understanding what the particular problems might be with why these animals are struggling in the wild. Or it might be, you know, supporting teams that are protective against poaching or logging and those sorts of aspects. And then we also have something called ex situ conservation. And that is essentially where zoos are involved in the populations of animals, not in their wild situation, but normally in a captive situation. So a lot of these conservation benefits are involved in breeding programs. So we want to try and make sure that we're protecting the genetics and protecting the future of this particular species. So that means that we're managing lots and lots of different animals. So normally across Europe, for example, we have breeding programs that stretch across all of the European zoos, and they will have one studbook coordinator who will manage the placement and individual animals. So if there's a breeding opportunity between two really genetically viable individuals, they will work out how both of those zoos can work together to be able to get those males and females paired, and which zoo and which enclosure is that going to work in. So it's a bit like a really big dating game with animals that you kind of piece together genetically more so than on you know, personality matches, for example. But zoos will also play a part in, you know, in, I suppose, supporting other zoos. So for example, in the Ukraine war, there was lots of zoos that had problems because of funding or war. And so we've had to, you know, kind of play a part in rehoming. And there are quite a lot of zoos that will, you know, take on individual animals that have been brought in into the country illegally from Heathrow through kind of, you know, trade issues, and they've not got the right paperwork, or they've brought them in illegally. And so essentially zoos will be taking on these endangered species that were meant for the pet trade. And so we're then incorporating and looking after those. So there's quite a lot of different avenues that zoos will get involved in with regards to conservation.
So what are zoos doing to ensure animal welfare today? And has that kind of shifted? And how can the public make more informed choices about the zoos they visit? Is there much variety?
There is, yes. So I mean, I love a zoo, but I love a good zoo. And I, you know, I'm able to tell and be able to pick out the differences between a good zoo and a bad zoo, or a not so good zoo. Certainly in this country, we have the Zoo Licensing Act, and there's been a recent update to the standards that I was involved in with regards to welfare changes. So that's really good to see that we are pretty much at the forefront of welfare within our zoos within this country. Now, there are quite a few other zoos elsewhere that are not quite so good, and that's where a lot of those bad zoos come in. But yeah, so for me, the welfare of the animals in this country is better than most in others. But there are certain species that we don't necessarily know a huge amount about. So reptiles, amphibians, a lot of invertebrates are still quite untapped as a research animal, because they are quite difficult to understand. With mammals, they kind of live the same way. The physiology is pretty much similar to the way that we are. So we're able to provide similes in terms of the way that we respond to things and how they respond. But it is very different for certain animals. So yeah, I think in terms of making informed decisions for the public to be able to check which zoos are good and which zoos aren't, generally have a look on their website beforehand. Look for reviews, because they are, you know, people are very happy to share their reviews with whether they've seen terrible things or not. And, you know, not necessarily to trust in a stranger, but generally the kind of general idea is that, you know, if you've got a good zoo, then there'll be multiple positive, reviews from that particular zoo. But also look at what their contributions are. So if they are contributing to conservation, how is that and what are they doing? And that should be on their website. But actually, almost without even realising, you've managed to plug into a book that I'm just about to just about to submit for publication, called The Zoo Review. And essentially that is a visitor's guide to understanding how to tell the difference between a good and bad zoo. So it gives you the readers a background of all the kind of ins and outs of the complications and complexities of zoos in the modern day world, and then what sort of tips and how to look for a good zoo wherever you may be going.
So it's not quite as simple as kind of just visually kind of observing, like whether the cages or the compounds, enclosures, thank you, are kind of like big or small. There's a lot more behind the scenes that we should be looking into.
Definitely, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people will always go to the space idea, and space is important, but actually there's some species that don't need space, they need complexity. So they might need area, you know, primates, for example, might not need a massive enclosure, but if they haven't got places to climb and swing and move around in their natural behaviours, then that's actually more important to them than having this massive, great, big open space. So there are a lot of complexities behind zoos and how they run as to whether it makes it a good zoo or not. A lot of the time as well, staffing and the staffing side of things. So having educated and well knowledgeable staff about the animals that they're working with, able to provide environmental enrichment. So that's basically a dynamic kind of toy, I suppose, in a better way of saying it, but where they're providing stimulation for the animals. So it might be different ways that they feed them, it might be encouraging them to climb to various different heights, it might be encouraging them to use their sense of smell. So these are things that need to be embedded into every animal's daily lives that will then encourage natural behaviours. And it's those natural behaviours which are then more indicative of positive welfare compared to absence, which might be abnormal behaviours, which is then poor welfare.
Thank you. It's really
Hopefully
interesting.
I didn't ramble on too much about that.
Oh, not at all. I was just thinking about kind of like visually when you go and you sort of observe, particularly about the primates there, I was thinking about watching them actually play. And obviously that's the bit that's really enjoyable as a viewer of going to go and see. And I hadn't really thought about the kind of the complexities of what their needs would be. But you kind of visually, you can see their own enjoyment. Yeah. And that's what makes it enjoyable for us as well. Sam, to finish up, what would one insight or takeaway you hope a listener would take from this discussion today?
I hope that people might be more willing to try again if they've had a bad experience. And the recognition, I suppose, that there are good zoos and there are not so good or bad zoos, and that they need to start to try and work out what the differences are. And that might align with their morals and their beliefs, but they need to work out and recognise what they are and then kind of, you know, move that forward in terms of what works for them and zoos that are positive experiences for them based on what their outputs are.
Sam, thank you so much for joining us today.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
If you'd like to find out more about Sam's work, please have a look in the episode description.
You've been listening to the Reframe podcast by Nottingham Trent University. For all the latest news from the research community at NTU, follow us on LinkedIn at NTU Research, or sign up to our research newsletter by visiting ntu.ac.uk/research.